Welcome to the Antisocial Podcast. This is episode 191 with Tim from our band Lord, aka Lord Tim. But before we kick into this week's episode, if you haven't met me before, If you haven't met me before, my name's Andy Dowling, and I also play in that band called Lord as well. And if you love a bit of old school heavy metal, love some heavy guitars, some sing-alongs, lots of guitar solos, lots of fun heavy metal stuff, go over to lord.net.au. We've got all our video clips, our back catalogue, links to Spotify, all the streaming services, Apple Music, etc. And it's a great way to get a taste of what we're all about. And if you're listening to this episode on time, within the week, our new album, Fallen Idols, will be released worldwide. And we are pumped. For anybody that's been listening to me crap on for the last year and a half or so, I've been building up hype for this. I've been crapping on about so much, and we are almost here. Well, we're here now, pretty much. We're here. So the 1st of August will be the release date of Fallen Idols, our brand new album, the first studio album in 6 years. I can hear Tim listening to this intro and cringing. We have been doing stuff in the last 6 years, lots of stuff. And we'll talk about that in our chat this week. But this is the first studio album in 6 years. A lot's changed. We are quietly confident, but we really want you guys to get behind this album and spread the word and get every fan of heavy music the chance to hear this album and hear some of the songs. So lots of you have been taking up the pre-order option and have pre-ordered the album through our online store by going to lord.net.au/FI. That's FI for Fallen Idols. And the take-up's been amazing. It's been the most successful pre-order campaign we've ever done from Lord and Dungeon eras of the band. So it's been extremely exciting, but 1st of August is going to be crunch time. So if you guys have got the album or you grab it on Spotify or Apple Music or whatever it is, please, like, photos on social media, do screenshots of you listening to the album via Spotify or whatever it is, link people to the album, share some tracks, individual tracks, whatever. Kill or Be Killed, I'll tell you right now, will be a playlist rotation song come the 1st of August. So please help us push that song as well as the rest of the album into playlists as well. So whatever you can do to spread the word, we are completely independent. The only record label deal that we've got apart from our own independent label is through Rubicon Records in Japan. They're releasing the album on the 7th of August. But apart from that, we're DIY. We do everything ourselves. So we really rely on people power to get behind us and help us get the album out there. And in turn, we continue to bring you guys great music and get out there and play shows as well. So a massive thank you for everybody that's been getting behind this album so far. It has set us up for success. We're really, really, really happy with how it's all gone so far. But come the 1st of August, we want the rest of the world to really hear it. So you guys in our inner circle have done wonders for us so far. And we really appreciate any further help that you can do come the 1st of August. So there we go. A little call to action for you all. Now, moving along, when I'm not being a heavy metal warrior, I also host a second podcast called Self Startup, which is all about small business, self-employment, and freelancing. So if you are one of those people that is all talk, you're full of ideas, you're never short of an idea, you can tell somebody a great idea to execute on, but you don't do anything yourself, you're all talk and no action. Well, maybe self-starters for you. Maybe there's a bit of inspiration here that might get you started, give you a little kick up the ass to get started on your own self-employment journey, start up your own business, whatever it might be, or do some freelance work, a bit of a side hustle, a bit of extra pocket money on the side, whatever it might be. If you know somebody out there that's struggling and trying to go through this process of moving away from their mundane job and want to get out there on their own, maybe this will be a little dose of inspiration for them and a bit of reassurance that a lot of other people go through the same feelings as well, and the same challenges when kickstarting their own self-employment journey. So lots of case studies, lots of great stories from people from all different industries, different types of professions, not just music. And we're in season two right now. Season two commenced at the beginning of June and will go until the end of December. And lots of great stories. I think we're three episodes in so far into season two. They come out every fortnight, Monday morning, 5 a.m. That's just how I roll, folks. And you can check it all out by going to selfstarter.com.au or searching for Selfstarter in your preferred podcast player as well. Maybe the podcast player you're listening through right now. Go and have a look after this episode, of course. Shout out time. Every week, I thank some legend. Okay, I've got to stop. Who supports me in the podcast and lots of different ways you can do so. It could be buying some merchandise online. It could be leaving a review somewhere in the internet. It could be a bit of social media love. It doesn't matter. It all helps. It keeps this whole thing moving, keeps me motivated, stimulated, inspired, all those great feelings. And it just means a lot to me. So thank you so much for people that, I mean, listening to this podcast is more than enough. But if you're doing these little 1% extras, it just blows me away. So thank you so much to everybody that does do these things. So every week I thank one person who does something to support me in the podcast. And this week's shout out is for Sam Carlin from Liverpool in the UK. Sam, like last week with, who was last week? Erica, gave me a mammoth guest recommendations list of lots of interesting people from his neck of the woods in the UK. Very cool. Very interesting. I don't think, I'm pretty sure I've had someone. Oh my God, I can't remember. Maybe I should stop talking. I was going to say, I can't remember if I've had anyone from the UK on the podcast. I'm pretty sure I have. Yeah, of course. Oh, well, Pete Wargent, he lives in Australia. I'm sure I'm missing somebody very obvious. Anyway, sorry, folks. Can't remember the last 190 episodes, every single one. I should. Anyway, I really should. Moving along. So Sam, give me a long list of interesting people from the UK. Some are very lofty. I don't know, man. Maybe you think this podcast is way bigger than what it is. Anyway, I like the lofty recommendations here, but there's some really good ones and some people that I'll certainly consider reaching out to. So Sam, when you hear this, shoot me a message. I would like to thank you personally, but also, well, I have already, but personally thank you with sending out some stuff in the post. So shoot me a message when you hear this, give me your address, and I'm going to find some stuff laying around the house and flick it out to you because we all love getting something in the mail. Now, a few extra thank yous to throw out there into the realm, into the atmosphere, into the world, into the, anyway, whatever. I have a page, andysocial.net/buystuff, where you can find all the shit that I sell on the internet. It could be Lord, it could be Dominus Records, it could be my eBay store, which has my stuff and Jess's stuff on there, in there, clothes, unwanted gifts, music memorabilia, lots of stuff in there, and a bit of an eclectic mix of things. And also my Discogs store is over on this page as well. And there's 1,800 plus records, CDs, cassettes, DVDs, ranging from metal to punk to rock to pop to jazz to whatever else. I'm missing a bunch of genres. Lots of different stuff there. Lots of cheap stuff. Lots of cheap stuff under $5 a pop. I think there's a couple of things like $1 or $2 each. Please clear me out of that stuff. I just need to get rid of it. Go and haul like all the bottom end. Anyway, lots of cheap stuff, lots of expensive stuff, lots of rare stuff, lots of really cool stuff. There's heaps and heaps of things over there in the Discog store. But if you go over to andysocial.net/buystuff, you can find all that stuff there. You can have a sticky beak. And please, if you're going to order anything or buy anything, please include a little message to say that you heard me crapping on about this in my podcast, because I will add a little thank you in there for you as well. Little extra thank you. Why not? A few people to say thank you who have been supporting me via my little portal page, my little e-commerce portal. What do we got here? Raymond from North Ipswich in Queensland. Gary from The Vines in Western Australia. Ooh, The Vines. Kyle from Lebanon in Pennsylvania. I always get confused with those European-named cities in the US. Anyway, Nathan from West Perth in Western Australia. Chris from East Victorian Park in Western Australia. Oh, fucking WA represent. Brad from Hopetoun Park in Victoria. And Angela from West Hobart in Tasmania. Thank you very much, folks. Much appreciated. It means a hell of a lot. So all the stuff that I flip and sell and turn over, all that money that I generate goes back into me, to buying beer. No, it goes back into this podcast. It goes back into doing video production. You guys would have seen my Getting Into Podcast video series. That has come directly from all of this stuff that you guys support me with. It comes into marketing. It comes into getting around the country and talking to lots of different people. It helps. So it just gets funded back into what I do. And so I really appreciate every little bit of help that you guys give me. So thank you very much, folks. andysocial.net/buystuff. Okay, friends, here we go. Episode 191 this week is with the man himself, Lord Tim. People have been requesting Tim for probably 190 episodes, more than likely. And he's finally on. He's finally joined the podcast, and we have a great chat. If you're not familiar with Tim, Tim formed the band that I play in called Lord. He formed the band back in 1989 in Broken Hill under the name Dungeon. He relocated to Sydney in the mid-90s. At the end of 2005, he changed the name of the band from Dungeon to Lord. And the rest is history. So we talk about the name change. We talk about the band. We talk about Broken Hill days. A lot of Broken Hill stuff. I'm actually really fascinated with growing up in a really isolated part of the country. This is where Mad Max was filmed, for any of our American or overseas listeners, just to give you a bit of a visual of what sort of area it is. We played out there a few times over the years, and it's just it's a really incredible, unique place. So anyway, we talk about a lot of this in the chat. Tim is also the man behind his other projects, Black and Angel. So some of you metal fans will know Black and Angel. He's also doing vocals in death metal band Serenity Defiled, and he's also played guitar in that band previously. There's some news from Serenity coming soon, so you can check out the Dominus Records page for all information on that. Tim has his own studio called SLS Studios. Tim is a mastermind, a genius. Sorry, I'm blowing smoke up your ass, Tim, who is the man behind all of our albums. He has self-produced, engineered everything, and is just an absolute whiz in the studio. And he's our secret weapon in more ways than one. So, very talented guy. He's got his own studio, and it's a full-fledged world-class studio that he has in Wollongong, and does a lot of other bands, and a lot of Australian artists have actually worked with Tim over the years, especially a lot of Australian metal artists. So, definitely something to look into if you are an aspiring musician or you're an established guy. And anyway, you know the drill. He also has his own production company called Dusk Music Video Productions. I hope I get that right because I didn't write it down in front of me. But Tim has also done all of our video clips for the last several years as well. An absolute genius, as well as working with James Lopez, who's been a previous guest of the Antisocial podcast from Arkshot Media. So Tim is a Swiss Army knife of talents, and we get into some of this stuff in the chat, but a lot of it is around old school dungeon talk, a lot of Broken Hill stories, and just heaps of stuff. We go in a number of different directions, so a lot of fun. We could have kept talking for hours, so I think Tim will have to be a reoccurring guest down the track as we continue to progress into this podcast journey. And also a little shout out for Mark. I know Mark will be listening into this little intro into this episode. Pull your finger out, mate. Let's get a podcast happening. Come on, let's do it. So anyway, take that with you. Enough crapping on for me. Please enjoy this great chat with Lord Tim, and check out the show notes for all the links to everything that Tim's involved with. Thank you. Enjoy. All right, Tim. We're just going to just start talking like we haven't been talking already, you know.
Hello, Andrew. It's good to see you. Thank you. Thank you for inviting me on your show.
This very, very organic and genuine conversation
yes,
we're having.
Yes, I've never seen this man before in my life.
I'm very intrigued by your little podcast here.
And, yes. Tell me about your podcast. Tell me some of the people you've had on your little podcast so far, Andrew.
Yeah, and then I'll make a judgment call as to whether I feel like I want
to
give
right.
my time.
Who have you had on your podcast so far?
Well, I've had a couple of people on the way.
Yeah.
I just put you through a bit of misery of signing a couple hundred booklets of the new album.
Never moved my hand up and down so many times in my life.
No, There you go. Set yourself up there.
Yep.
Can you remember the first time you signed anything?
Fuck. first Dungeon show, February 1990.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I can't remember what it was, but I remember we had a bunch of people come in that night. We did two shows that particular day. We did one in the afternoon where we were playing like the matinee between sets of a band called Borderline. Borderline was a quote unquote oldies band in Broken Hill at the time. There was, everybody was, doing like not pub rock bands, like cabaret bands where they would play for 3 hours and they'd go through all the hits and mostly for people to dance to or
drink background music.
Drink their beer to and all that kind of stuff. And the guy who worked at the local music store, a guy called Peter Harvey, was the bass player for this band.
Yep.
And he said, you know, would you guys like a show? And we'd never played before. And we said, yes.
And what we're doing.
Yeah, we're supposed to be playing like in 20 minutes between their sets, you know, just playing in the corner of this room. we did this. Like they finished their first set. We played half a song just as a check to see if it would work. And the whole place erupted. It was just insane. Absolutely insane. And Borderline packed up their gear and went home and left us there for an hour and a half to basically finish playing everything we knew a couple of times to this crowd because they knew the crowd just didn't care about them. And I felt kind of bad because they were great people, but at the same time, hey, rock star. the wait staff came over and said, look, we would like you to come back later tonight and do what you just did then again.
Wow.
And we just went, sure, okay. There was a couple of bikies in the crowd at the time, and they said, if you don't come back, we were going to beat you guys up. And we were just like, look, we're coming back. We're coming back. And so came back that night, and yeah, I believe that the crowd was like three times as big, and we signed a bunch of stuff that night, just feeling like utter rock stars on our very first and a half show.
That would have been so surreal, because you obviously went into it just thinking, oh, well, we're going to play a couple of songs here. We were shitting ourselves.
We were absolutely shitting ourselves. Like there was always... When we first started doing this stuff, there was always the goal of being rock stars. Mm. Like, why would you do this stuff unless you want to be famous?
Yeah.
You know, I want a pussy. because what else do you do as a skinny white guy in the middle of the outback? You want to be famous and get pussy. Didn't work, mind you. But I wanted to be famous. I wanted to be like Simon Le Bon. I wanted to be like Bruce Dickinson. I wanted to be Don Dokken. I wanted to be Blackie Lawless. I wanted to be all those guys. So when you're standing there and you've got like everybody in the room going nuts, and then they're dragging you off to sign things and signed a boob that night. And what does that do to like a 19-year-old kid in the bush? It was amazing. It was life changing.
How many songs did you have like up your sleeve? Because I'm just thinking, you said you kind of had to repeat songs. I couldn't think of anything more awkward than say, hey, we're going to play the next song that we just played before. And
see, that show wasn't actually that bad because the crowd was so far behind us. But yeah. I'll tell you another story in a second, linked to that. But what do we have? We would have, you know, Don't Leave Me, which was the very first song that we ever played. And we're still actually doing that now. Like we pull that out every now and then just for nostalgia's sake.
Fun
dumb rock song.
Yeah.
And we had maybe, I don't know, about six or seven originals, which I'd written, combined with like one or two that Jason, the other guitar player, had written.
Yeah.
And with terrible lyrics. My God, there's a reason we don't play those songs now. But the thing is with Broken Hill bands at the time, it's all about being pub friendly.
Yeah.
So it was all covers. So there was Dokken, there was the Angels, there was all that kind of stuff. We would launch. The second song was Just Got Lucky by Dokken.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Yeah. Nice. Am I Ever Going to See Your Face Again? Pub classic that we had to do. You know, that kind of stuff. So it was kind of about 50-50 our songs and pub songs that we had to do in the end. We played a lot of them really badly and played a couple of them like once or twice in the set, and nobody caught on and those first things. But I do remember, though, we end up playing a place called the Pig and Whistle, which, you know, there's a Pig and Whistle in every suburb. I think there's about two or three of them. Pig and Whistle 3 down the block next to the Pig and Whistle.
Next to the O somethings.
Yeah, that's right. And I remember we were playing there one time. We just had our very first lineup, and we were booked in to play for 3 hours. Because the thing is, for Broken Hill, it's all musicians union things. So the musicians union had very strict rules on how long you needed to play for. So you had to play for a minimum of 3 hours.
Wow.
You had a meal break for a certain amount of time. You had to go to musicians union meetings every month at the trades hall. It was just amazing. Broken Hill is it's very Christian and it's very union driven. Yeah. The unions kind of started in Broken Hill.
Yeah, right.
And so everything was unionized there. Mm. So the musicians union, if you attempted to play a pub and you weren't a member of the union, the pub would either ban you or they would blacklist the pub. And if you were going to play at a pub, then you needed to follow the musicians union rules to a T. Otherwise, you would get blackballed.
Fuck, I didn't even know such a thing existed.
It was amazing. It was all strangleheld. So bad. So there's poor us, you know, wanting to be badly an arena band, but being not good enough to be an arena band, and also not having an arena. playing in the beer garden of a place called the Pig and Whistle for 3.5 hours to satisfy our contractual obligations. And we got up to like 90 minutes in, and I'm looking at everyone, they're all sweating and dead and just going, what do we do?
Yeah.
Started the set over again. Just and
reset.
Yeah, and there was maybe about 25 people there not giving anywhere near half a shit about what we were doing.
It's like, please make noise. Make noise. So I
remember we had wireless systems at the time. This was like a big
wireless.
Deal. Yeah, yeah. Like really? The very first show that we ever did, I had a little wireless, like little Nady 201, terrible piece of shit.
Yeah.
I remember our very first show. I came strolling in from the toilets at the back of the room through the crowd, and it blew everybody away that I'm what a wanker though. But for a bunch of kids in the desert, a bunch of teenagers in the outback, that was super impressive.
Mm.
Now you'd go, what a wanker.
Yeah, yeah.
And looking back, I'm going, what a wanker. But no, I had a wireless system that particular time. I remember this table of girls that was like sitting right in the middle of the beer garden, just drinking their beer and having a good old conversation while we're playing. And I just remember jumping over and jumping on top of their table. Drinks go everywhere. They shit their pants.
Everyone would have loved that.
It was funny for about a minute and a half. Then they went back to drinking their drinks and not caring again. So yeah, it was tough, man. It was really tough.
Having a sort of a set of like, or being told that you have to play for a minimum of 3 hours. I mean, I just think about what we do these days. And like,
we've done 2.5. That was the longest one that we ever did.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was tiring.
Yeah.
That was...
exhausting. Yeah. And especially for... look, I mean, maybe you could say that the young people these days, they've got a little bit more energy than us, but, you know, for a bunch of teens, like, to be told that you have to be playing for a minimum of 3 hours and not know a lot...
Yeah, I was 20 at the time. Our guitar player at the time was 16.
Yeah.
Fletch. And poor kid, he spent basically the entire show looking down at his guitar, shit in his pants because it was his first ever show. but we were a bunch of energetic kids that just thought we could take on the world. And by the end of it, they carried us out of there on stretchers. we were dead. And luckily, like, we weren't doing anywhere near the speed metal stuff that we do now.
Yeah.
This was before, I think, early Dungeon, even though I was writing things that could have easily been, you know, extreme metal, we chose not to play that because we had people in the band from all different styles of music.
Yeah.
You know, our drummer was into classic rock. The keyboard player was into, you know, melodic rock and pop. You know, the guitar player was an Iron Maiden and all that sort of stuff. And here's me wanting to form the next Slayer out the front. So I ditched a lot of that sort of stuff just to make sure that the band had something that we could all connect in. So we weren't doing any of the really extreme stuff that Lord is known for now.
Yeah.
I mean, just imagine doing 3 hours worth of, you know, Reborn or United. Holy crap. they'd be scraping us off the stage.
Was that a difficult compromise for you to have at that time? Or is it more of just the excitement of just playing with people and playing music that you all able to find sort of a common appreciation for, that was more than enough to keep you fueled?
I was desperate to form Slayer. Too. I wanted it was Slayer, it was Onslaught, it was Creator, it was Destruction, all of those bands. I wanted to do that.
Mm.
But in the back of my mind, I wanted to also combine that with Helloween and Anthrax.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So like melodic stuff, but at the same time like super heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember looking for about 3 years for people and finding nobody. Because again, in Broken Hill, you're in the middle of nowhere. Like, where the fuck do you find like a bunch of like great musicians that's good enough to play Destruction?
Yeah.
You don't. You absolutely don't. And a lot of the musicians in Dungeon at the time are made. I was teaching guitar, I was teaching drums, I was teaching bass and all that kind of stuff. So I would get these guys in that showed a little bit of a promise and give them free guitar lessons to get them up to scratch so I could poach them and put them in my band. and work it out all that way. But there was a limit to what we were doing. There was only, you know, so much you could work with. You know, if you're a good rock drummer, to get up to the speed of like being Dave Lombardo, it just wasn't going to happen. So when Dungeon kind of happened by accident, the bass player was in the 50s rock and roll. The drummer was into Def Leppard and John Cougar Mellencamp. The keyboard player was in the Roxette.
Yeah.
The guitar player was into Rat. And here's me wanting to be Tom Araya. So what do you do? I could sit a stamp again, stamp my princess foot and go, nope, I want to form a thrash band, and then still be sitting in my bedroom as a very miserable middle-aged man right now with a dead end job. Or I could go, well, you know what? This is doing something.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're going to go, we're going to do something. And frankly, I liked a lot of the stuff all the other guys were into anyway. Yeah. I thought Roxette was great. I love LA rock, you know, Def Leppard, fucking cool, mm. you know? It wasn't so much in the 50s rock and roll, mind you, Eddie, but, it was just, that was one of the grating points. That's Eddie ended up leaving early and replaced by a guy that was into Black Sabbath. So yeah. Again, that really, I love Black Sabbath. So all, there was all stuff that we, that I identified with each one of these members, but it wasn't quite what I intended that I really wanted to do. It's kind of ironic now that Lord is exactly the band that I imagined that Dungeon should have been when we first started in 1989.
Eventually got there.
But it was a compromise. But at the same time, I think it was a smart compromise. And I enjoyed the music anyway. I thought it was cool, even though we were missing that chunk of stuff that I thought I would have liked to have done.
Do you think, in hindsight, sort of looking back, it was maybe an advantage to sort of be coming out of Broken Hill, where there's this isolated town, and like isolated's an understatement, and not having a lot of immediate resources and people and skill set, as opposed to having the same sort of path based in Sydney, where you would have had a lot more of the opportunity at your fingertips? Do you think you were forced to be creative and forced to have to push yourself, and that was an advantage?
Broken Hill was, especially in the 80s and early 90s when we were there, there was no internet.
Mm.
There was no guitar teachers. There was any instructional stuff. There was things like Metal Method from Doug Marks that you could get in from mail order, which our guitar player Jason got, which I just remember watching him play for the first time, just going, how do you even do this? Where did you learn to do this?
Yeah.
Not even knowing that these things existed. And he was telling me about these mail order tapes that you get in from America. So we were kind of, when we were trying to work out what things were and how they all fit together, for me, it was a 12-inch mixes, like listening to remixes and stuff and trying to work backwards that way. Any guitar licks and stuff like that, I know I was playing it wrong.
Mm.
I know my technique was bad, but I wanted to learn. I built my own guitars with a friend back in the early days because I wanted to learn how that all worked. And then when we finally came to Sydney, we just watched all of the other bands that we were playing with and working with sound exactly the same. Yeah. Everybody was jumping on the, you know, the mid-90s death metal trend. Everyone was jumping on Pantera.
Yeah.
And I couldn't work out why everybody sounded so much the same. Everyone was trying to out-heavy each other. Everyone was trying to out-dark each other. And there we are, you know, walking out with like Don't Leave Me and Dokken songs and, you know, combining with like Changing Moods and everything like that. And so many guys that we had come in to audition, they couldn't get it in their minds. Mm. The one particular guy sort of sticks in my fucking mind. I put an ad in the paper saying band guitar player wanted, into Dokken, Helloween, Slayer, Iron Maiden, White Lion, and it was just like
this mixed bag of
disconnected list of stuff. And anyway, turns up and he's got this BC Rich Warlock, and I went, oh, cool, pointy guitar, fucking champion, excellent, tick. Had the long hair and all that kind of stuff, and you know, so and this thing, he pulls out this HM2 heavy metal pedal, cool. Good. He pulls out a DS1 distortion pedal, and he pulls out, you know, a tube screamer. And he pulls out another overdrive pedal.
Yeah.
And all right, are you trying to get like different textures or something here? Plugs them all in together, turns them all on. And it sounds like an ocean.
Oh, wow.
And starts playing his guitar and he's tuned to like, you know, B or something unbelievable. Burr, 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 burr. You know, through this ocean of static. And I went,
did you not see the White Lion part in this advert?
I watched him chug away, just doing like speed picking, like bad. I think it was black metal. I'm not really sure what he was doing. And I said, here's a bit of what we're doing. And Don't Leave Me comes on. It's like a melodic rock song. And he's sitting there looking absolutely completely unimpressed with everything that I'm playing. And I said, well, what do you think? He goes, oh, mate, I thought it was going to be a bit heavier than that, mate. I was like, well, what did you think it was going to be like? He said, oh, Deicide. I like thrash, and I like death. I like black. I like, you know, that stuff. I thought that's what you were doing, mate. Dokken, Dwight Lion, get the fuck out of my house. I told him to leave. I was like, pick your stuff up and get out.
Did you ever, like, when you eventually relocated to Sydney and started to sort of find your feet and get established and find more people to work with, it's not the right way of explaining it, but did you ever feel that you had to not touch on the fact that you were from Broken Hill? Did you ever sort of feel, not ashamed, but did you ever think, I'm not going to reflect on that and sort of make ourselves more of a Sydney band or Sydney musicians?
We did eventually start calling ourselves a Sydney band because we were based there. But no, Broken Hill was always the people always say, oh, mate, never forget where you're from. We really kind of didn't. But we did. We were a little bit careful explaining that from a marketing point of view, it was unique that we were from somewhere like that.
Yep.
Our management at the time took that and ran with it. You've heard this story, but for the people playing along at home, we signed to Japan, to TDK Core Records, and they just started doing rock stuff. They were originally doing movie soundtracks and TV soundtracks. They looked after the music for Iron Chef, for instance. And in our bio, which we didn't realize had actually been sent over, it said that we were born in a mine shaft 1,000 meters below the ground in Broken Hill, that our heavy metal was so loud it started caving in, so we had to relocate to Sydney because the council wouldn't let us play in Broken Hill anymore because we were just caving in mine shafts. I apparently had 6 fingers, which is the reason I played so quick, because of the, you know, the crazy environment out there. People were born with like crazy things like that. And it was just bullshit after bullshit after bullshit. And I understand exactly why he was saying this. You know, it's his job to hype it up and make people read the bio and go, the fuck is this? And then listen to the music. And it worked. It actually did work. But I remember reading this later and just being so mortified that somebody would do that. And it was about the only time that I've really felt kind of embarrassed about saying, yeah, we're a Broken Hill band. Because, you know, there's a lot of things that is wrong with Broken Hill. I can say that because I'm from there. But man, it sounded, made everybody seem like a bunch of inbred, deformed idiots.
I know what I was missing this earlier this year when we were trying to get our Japanese deal sorted. I was missing an overhyped, over the top sort of appropriate bio.
Oh, the singer's got 2 dicks.
Yeah, we would have got that deal a hell of a lot quicker.
That's right.
Yeah, ever since I sort of discovered Dungeon and started, you know, listening to the music and meeting you and seeing the shows, that Broken Hill sort of aspect's been there. And I think it's a great narrative because obviously I think maybe it was in later years where people started to sort of reflect and tie in the Mad Max sort of stuff a little bit more as well. But I think it's sort of worked to your advantage personally.
Well, that was literally up the road from my house.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy to think of all these big movies and everything like that that's come out of there and how iconic the place has become, and it's just basically a little shit stain in the middle of the outback.
Well, it's definitely, I mean, it's got that metal theme to it. It's got that metal sort of identity to it. And obviously people that love sort of heavier, harder music would obviously find an attraction to that type of movie as well. So it made a lot of sense sort of to extend on that narrative. But was that a management thing that sort of tied in that, or was that something that just sort of naturally sort of
that kind of, like, time? You don't think of Broken Hill without thinking about all the movies and all that sort of stuff. But it is an interesting thing though, because being such an isolated little town, when you do get all of the metalheads together, these isolated pockets of people, the environment in Broken Hill was very oppressive if you wanted to listen to heavy metal. There was a lot of differing factions of various things, especially the skinheads. So it was always metalheads versus skinheads, which is retarded as shit.
Both minorities in sort of the music.
Both minorities, and both basically wanted to do the same thing. Both kind of rebel, listening to aggressive music. Yep. You know, just one lot had shaved heads and docks, the other guys had long hair and high tops.
Yeah.
That's the only difference. We both wore denim jackets. We both wore, like, you know, my band shirts tight pants and everything like that. And we both wanted to kill each other and damn near did on some occasions. There was a lot of our crew got put in hospital and everything like that. But anyway, it was a really oppressive kind of place to live. So you watch a lot of those 80s heavy metal movies where, you know, the metal guys are the outsiders and they band together because that's the one thing that keeps them all in common. It's the music that brought them all together.
Yeah.
It was actually literally just like that back in the day for us. You know, there was nowhere to go. There was nothing to do. And all it was just metal music that was bringing us, you know, very different people together, just for the love of wanting that music and for the fact that if we didn't stick together, we would have gotten the shit kicked out of us by everybody else. and also did anyway, but less so because there was a lot of us.
What was the reaction from not so much your inner circle, but I guess other people that you knew growing up in Broken Hill when you started to take music more seriously and start to play and get a band together and start to do shows? And even later when you've made the decision, hey, we're getting the fuck out of town, we're going to go to Sydney and give it a shot or check it out. I mean, what was the reaction from some of the people back home?
I remember there's two things that stuck in my mind just before that happened. There was one, a friend, I said, I wanted to be a singer.
Yeah.
And he goes, you can't be a singer. I went, why not? He goes, well, that's only for people in big cities. That's for people with money that can find members and bands and they can make things happen. That doesn't happen to people in Broken Hill.
Yeah.
And I went, that doesn't sound right to me. I'm doing it anyway. Fuck you. And the other one was we just finished doing one of our very first demo tapes, which I recorded on. It was either a four track or the very first way that I used to record was two tape decks connected together with a little mixer, little microphone mixers from Tandy's, and. I would play, say, live drums on a keyboard. So, down onto this tape, put that into another one of the tape decks, let that play back in real time when I'd layer something over the top onto another tape, then swap the tapes over and it just turn into noise by the end of it.
Muddy thing, yeah.
And eventually I got brave enough to sing over the top of that because I was too shy to sing for years. And I just remember playing this tape to this girl and she goes, wow, you sound like a real singer.
Thanks, I think.
Yeah, you sound just like a real singer. I just went, I'm on my way. I'm on my way. I sound just like a real singer. I'm not a singer. I sound just like one, though. I think that it initially, once things started taking off, there was half the guys were really happy, and the other half were kind of, I think we all wanted to be in a band.
Yeah.
At that point, if you're a metal guy, you want to be like a singer in a metal band or, you know, go on tour and all that sort of stuff. Get them chicks and all that kind of stuff like kids in the bush want to do. And I think there were some noses that were originally kind of put out of joint because they never did it. Mm. A lot of these people have since come around and know that we weren't trying to rub it in anyone's face. You know, we were just doing it because we had to.
Mm.
We weren't doing it just to say, ha ha, sucked in, man. If only you bought that microphone.
Yeah.
it wasn't that at all. And it was never about that.
Yeah.
But I think after that initial, you guys think you're too good for us thing kind of wore off.
Mm.
Everybody realized why we were doing it and why, you know, we were proud of where we come from. We're proud of all the metalheads that we grew up with. You know, it was a dysfunctional, sometimes retarded family, but it was our family.
Were there any other bands that sort of before you that had done something similar as far as, you know, getting semi-established in Broken Hill and then going to the big smoke, so to speak, to cut their teeth? Was there anybody else that had sort of done anything similar that
you could? Not really. Yeah. No, we used to say that we were the best heavy metal band in Broken Hill. we were the only heavy metal band in Broken Hill, but we were the best one of that one.
Yeah.
Sometimes we weren't even that good. Broken Hill was one of these weird kind of places where, like I said, it was like mostly cabaret oldies bands, which were fulfilling their obligations as far as the musicians union was concerned. There was another band called Gasp, which were kind of like indie pop.
Okay.
I think they changed their name to the Jubes or something later. Which really, really good dudes, but really nothing like what we were doing.
Yeah.
We were about the only real metal band in town. There might have been, I know our guitar player Jason was trying to do something with another guy that never really kind of took off. So, but I don't think there was actually any metal bands as such that took off and went anywhere.
Mm.
since then, there's obviously been Soulforge as well. Dale Corney, who was one of the main members of Dungeon for so many years, he left and formed Soulforge, and they did some great stuff. Fantastic band. But no, at the time, I think we're really one of the first, if not the first.
The other thing that I found fascinating when, and we've done a few shows in Broken Hill over the years was...
To various degrees of success.
Yeah. A couple of hits and misses.
That last one was a misser, right?
Yeah, but, Night Train. Your sister with... And I'm going to get all these things mixed up.
Absolutely.
But is it sister?
Yes.
Sister with... The pub that we played in the last occasion or the last two occasions. Last two occasions. I mean, that venue seems to be quite iconic in Broken Hill.
I saw Ice House there. Yeah. I saw the Angels there. Ian Moss.
Yeah.
You know, huge bands came through there all the time because it was a big international venue.
So, I mean, for you guys and probably other people in the area, you would have been exposed to live music, obviously people coming in and out of town, but was Broken Hill sort of obviously with bands of that caliber, but I mean, mind you, this is going back a few years. I mean, it would have been, was it a steady sort of regular stop for a lot of these?
It really was. Bands? And in fact, even in the 70s, when I was a kid, I saw Little River Band. I saw AC/DC, everything from, Slim Dusty through to through the really, really big pop names coming through playing the Broken Hill Civic Center or Entertainment Center or whatever they're calling this now. And then by the time the 80s came along, the Night Train really kind of took off. And yeah, just seeing Ice House play at the Night Train was just brilliant. Seeing the Angels there. I saw most of the Angels. I spent a lot of the night throwing up. That was a big night. seeing the guitar player in the toilet, even more bent off his head than I was like, that was an experience. And then I threw up. It was great. And we were banned from playing there. We were told by my sister that like we weren't good enough to play there. And she was, I hate to say this, and if she's listening, fuck you, but you were right. Now shut up. That's the one time I'm ever going to say you're right. But she was absolutely right to not get us to play. We rehearsed on that stage.
Yeah.
I remember we had all our gear sort of stored underneath that stage, this big, for those people who have never been there, which is probably most of the people listening.
Yeah.
The stage was a good 2 meters tall. It's huge.
Oh, yeah. It's really high off the ground.
It's really, really high off the ground. So you can walk underneath it. There was curtains that were separating it from the dance floor in front because it was a disco most of the time.
Yeah.
And we had all our gear sort of stored behind these curtains underneath the stage. And there's been many a time I remember getting drunk. When we wrote the song Vodka Frenzy, it was about me and our drummer Ian getting drunk at the Night Train. That's what it was about. And I remember getting so drunk, I fell underneath the stage one time and I was sitting there in amongst our drum kit and our amps and everything like that, just thinking, how did I get to rehearsal? I don't understand. couldn't actually understand how suddenly I was on the dance floor dancing with these two drunk girls and now I'm here with all my musical equipment. But that's the Night Train for you. It was just one of these really quirky places that had an amazing stage that we never played on.
It was, I mean, I was really impressed with the place, the way that it was set up. And I think when we eventually played there, I think it had been closed for quite a few years.
Yeah. The Night Train, unfortunately, had a bit of a reputation of being, we used to call it the Fight Train.
Okay.
Yeah. The reason being, in Broken Hill, you would go out to places like RSL clubs. There was one place called the Demo Club, the Barrier Social Democratic Club, or whatever we called it, the Demo. And you'd see your oldies bands play there, and nobody would pay attention to the oldies bands. You'd drink your $1.70 vodkas and get absolutely fucking hammered. Then when you got kicked out of the Demo, you would wander up the street to the Night Train and basically just spend the rest of the night there until you got kicked out of there at 5 a.m.
Wow.
You can imagine how this is going to all go, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got a bunch of drunk idiots like completely off their brain before they even got to the Demo, and then leaving the Demo, even more cheap vodkas piling into the Night Train. And as I was saying earlier, with the undercurrent of different groups in Broken Hill, you would have skins in there. You'd have the Aboriginal population. You'd have the rednecks. You'd have the trendies who hated everybody. You'd have the then you'd have the metalheads wander in just to a disco, the worst fucking place for a metalhead to wander. But like it was the only place open.
Yeah.
And naturally, what comes natural is a brawl.
Yeah.
And so eventually the Night Train kind of like, well, you know, this is a bit of a liability, but my sister really wanted to bring it back. There was a lot of nostalgia attached to the Night Train, and she's doing it a bit tough because there's still quite a lot of stigma attached to the place because of that, but she's running a pretty tight ship now. Mm. So I think by the time we started playing there, the nostalgia was running pretty high for getting people back in. But there was always the idea that it was kind of some kind of dangerous disco. So you'd on one hand, you'd have like half the crowd just going, holy crap, we're back at the Night Train. This is great. And the other half going, we're not going in there. We don't want to get beaten up.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Bad vibes.
Yeah.
I was really impressed with the place. I think it's a great setup.
It's a fantastic venue.
It's really good. I mean, one of the things that I sort of looked at when we went in there, and I think this is not long after that, we started to lose a lot of venues in Sydney. And I just looked at it and thought, man, like if a venue like this was in Sydney, this would be fucking amazing.
It really, in a lot of ways, it's very reminiscent of the Gaelic Club.
Yeah, with the
balcony, huge capacity, massive stage, and all that kind of stuff. It's a great venue.
Mm.
Put a good PA there, relocated to a city, laughing. But
chuck on the back of a flatbed.
Yeah, that's right. But the fact of the matter is, it's like sitting out in the middle of the outback. And
that's right. Well, when everyone listening, when you make that decision to go out to Broken Hill, which I'm sure it's on everyone's list.
Absolutely. I couldn't imagine doing anything more important than going out for 1,200-kilometer drive to a shit stain in the middle of the outback.
Well, make sure you include Night Train on your list, and hopefully, I mean, is she still doing gigs out there?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. It's more. I think the rock gigs have kind of stopped a little bit, and so it's kind of like dance acts and discos. Like the focus is really the Night Train disco is a disco. So the fact that there's a stage there is kind of like, you know, that's great if you want to put international bands or big touring bands and all that sort of stuff on there. But being a country town, the only thing that's going to get people in through the door is the established dance acts to a disco.
You gotta
play to your market. Otherwise, it's going to send you broke.
That's right. Absolutely. So obviously, seeing like all these iconic bands coming through Broken Hill, I mean, it wouldn't have been completely foreign for you and your friends and sort of that local area to experience what live music's all about. It wasn't just, obviously, the guys who were local based were all these sort of older cabaret sort of acts, but you guys were still getting exposed to some like shit hot, like really good sort of Australian live music that was coming through.
Yeah, absolutely. Although we never really got any metal through there.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that was the thing. Metal just always seemed like this exotic thing that always happened in America or happened in Europe. It didn't even occur to us that like metal might be happening in Australia, which is dumb because of course it was.
Yeah.
You know, Hobbs and Mortal Sin and all that sort of stuff were doing amazing things in the 80s, you know, Boss and all these great bands. But it never really kind of occurred to us that a metal band could come from Australia. It was just always overseas stuff because metal bands just never went through Broken Hill. So when we finally started playing and doing Dokken and doing Maiden and doing all this kind of stuff, people freaked out, especially the metal crew. They just freaked out at the fact that there was somebody actually doing our music.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Did you guys ever go down to Adelaide and see anything there? I mean, I don't know if Adelaide was an attraction for any of these bands.
Well, Adelaide, that was only, when I say only, 6 hours down the road from Broken Hill. So, and we used to go to Adelaide fairly regularly. But I know a lot of the older metalheads. I was one of the younger metalheads. These guys are like 4 or 5 years older than me.
Yeah.
They would disappear off to Adelaide, and you know they might see Iron Maiden there or something like that. So they'd see an international band sort of come through.
Yeah.
You know, slightly before my time.
Yep.
And all that sort of stuff. And I'm sure a few of them sort of realised that like there was Australian metal bands and everything like that as well. But again, Adelaide just seemed like a whole world away from where we were because we were in the middle of nowhere. So to go to Adelaide and see Iron Maiden come back, it's like, fuck yeah, I saw Iron Maiden. Then everyone in Broken Hill was like, oh, great.
Cool.
Yeah.
What was the first metal band that you got to see? Was it not until you moved to Sydney?
It wasn't until I moved to Sydney. Yeah. And it was Sepultura.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, of all things. I'm not a massive Sepultura fan at all. But we were trying out this drummer called Chuck something. And he wasn't very good, unfortunately. But He had a big kit and he was a big Lars fan apparently back when everyone thought Lars could play. Sorry if you're listening, Lars, because I know Lars listens to your podcast.
Yeah, he's a big fan. There we go. That's how big my podcast is.
That's right. But back when everybody revered, you know, your Master of Puppets and all that kind of stuff, like this guy was like really big into 80s Lars. He said, like, do you want to go see Sepultura? And I went, oh, yeah, sure, why not? And I just remember turning up. It was at the Horden Pavilion.
Really?
And what's the pub next to the Horden? It's the...
I don't know. I'm not... Like across the road from it?
Across the road. The
I don't know. I think it might have changed names a few times.
The Captain Cook.
Okay.
Yeah. I remember wandering into there first before we wandered to the Horden, and the place was packed full of people wearing leather jackets and long hair. And I just went, holy fucking shit. I've never seen so many heavy metal guys in my entire life. And it was just a genuine shock to think that there was metalheads.
Yeah, well.
Wanted in to see Sepultura, and frankly, I didn't think they were that good. Yeah. sorry, Sepultura fans. It really kind of wasn't my thing, and I didn't think they sounded particularly good. The Horden is very hit and miss with sound, yeah, anyway, as anybody who's been there knows.
Was this what, like, would have been like Roots, maybe? The, like,
92, 93?
90, oh, it might be in Chaos AD or something,
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, it might have been there. Yeah. It would have been late 92, early 93.
Okay, yeah.
And again, I just remember just standing there. Mm. There was 4,500, 5,000 people in there. The great bulk of them wearing jeans and jackets and long hair.
My people.
And I just went, holy fucking shit.
Yeah.
What? You know, seeing like your 20 mates,
yeah,
for all of your existence into this kind of music, and then suddenly seeing literally 200 times that amount. It's just amazing. Absolutely amazing. So that was life-changing. And then not long after that, I saw Iron Maiden on their Fear of the Dark, yeah, Metallica on their Black Album tour, Def Leppard on their Let's Get Rocked thing. And so it's like, it was just went on a roll. And yeah, like, and those shows were genuinely great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did, can you remember who supported, on Sepultura?
No.
No idea?
No. I don't think we even saw the support band. Yeah. It was probably Segression. Because Segression did everything.
Segression did a lot of stuff, yeah, in the 90s.
Hey, Chris.
I saw them support Pantera in the early 2000s, the last time Pantera came out, and they got out of a taxi. And I remember thinking, what kind of rock stars are these guys if they rock up in a taxi? And then, obviously, years later, that's pretty much all we do.
Well,
rock up in taxis to get it.
It's kind of funny because, like, we obviously know the Segression guys now. We're friends with, yeah, Chris and Red and all those guys, and they're really down to earth dudes.
Mm.
They are just good down to earth guys.
Yeah.
And you don't think of it. Like, if you're going to be up on one of those stages, you must be, you know, rock star. You must be pulling up in your limo, or you have your entourage, or at least be arrogant or a wanker or something like that, and. It was an interesting thing, sort of getting to know these guys years later, and it's like, well, hang on a minute, they're just guys, yeah, they're just good dudes.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
and it makes you really kind of think how people look at us.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, oh, you get the weirdest questions from people just asking, of like very rock star-ish type questions, and you just think, oh man, like I barely see myself as a musician sometimes, let alone anything else on top of that. And,
I'm barely a person.
Yeah, I'm barely a person. But I guess it's that perception, isn't it? Like, that you create, and if people aren't exposed to it or aren't part of that environment, then they sort of, they draw up their own sort of concept of what they think it would be like. They start to fantasize about what it potentially could be like being in a band.
And it's manufactured to a point. It's a cross between the excesses of the 80s and early 90s, yeah, where everyone saw all the money being thrown around, Motley Crue, like millions of dollar contracts, Iron Maiden playing in front of like 25,000 people, you know, all that kind of stuff. So you got that firmly in your mind, because that's, if you're doing similar music, so there, therefore you must be earning similar dollars. And it's not the case.
No,
you know, you see a lot of big bands, especially now, like they've got day jobs.
Yep.
And this is big touring bands that tour the world quite a lot. They go home to their day job.
That's right. And I think, I mean, one thing that we've done and really well, and I think we've sort of kept a real focus on it, is almost being, for the most part, the same person who's out on the floor, standing around the bar, having a chat to somebody, and then getting on stage and playing. And obviously, we're still putting on a show. We're remembering that we're entertainers, and there's got to be a little bit of a difference there. But ultimately, we're not high and mighty above everybody else.
No, and it's never been that. That's especially in the Dungeon days. I think it was probably even more understated back when, you know, Steve-O and Dak and all those guys were in the band. We would always say that there's no difference between us and you guys, except for the fact that we're standing on a slightly bigger bit of floor and we're making a bit more noise.
Yeah.
With that said, nobody wants to see their mate get up on stage.
Yep.
They want to see a show.
Mm.
And I think for all of us, and I know me especially, I become quote unquote Lord Tim when I walk on stage. And I would hate to be that guy 24 hours a day because he's a fuckhead. it's me, but it's a hyped version of me.
Yeah.
You know, a little louder, a lot more wankery, a lot more showing off. You know, the guitar duels that me and Mark have, for instance. My God, can you imagine if we were for real about that?
Yeah.
what a couple of dickheads.
Yeah.
But I think people want to see a show. They want to be entertained. And so you've got to be a larger than life version of yourself. Otherwise, you're just a guy.
it's an interesting balance because, I mean, we've certainly seen a lot of bands over the years that definitely go too far in one direction as far as it's the tall poppy syndrome. It's, you know, I don't want to be seen as a bit of a wanker. So I get on stage as I am with standing next to my mate and having a drink. And so you just stand there and just play your songs and you get off the stage.
It's so understated that it's like, well, great, but...
But what's the why are you doing it in the first place?
Yeah. I want to... One thing that I am a little annoyed about, but I'm also very appreciative about, is the fact that we don't stand still when we do stuff. There's always shapes. There's always some gag or something stupid.
Yeah.
Going on because we're putting this show on.
Yeah.
That's at the expense of the music sometimes.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
You know, like you guys, like doing the moving the mic down to dick level. Fuck you guys! Can you stop doing that? But it's funny as shit, and it puts on a good show. But anybody who thinks that you guys are actually playing your instruments properly while you're doing that,
no,
you are not. You are not doing that.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, me playing on the wrong side of the guitar, or you know, I'm looking out of the crowd, sort of. Doing some goofy head at the crowd. I'm not looking at what I'm doing. I'll look down and I'm like one fret out on my guitar. And it's like, oh man, I bet that sounded like complete ass. It's fucking terrible. But people come to our shows and they want to be entertained. They want to see people having a good time and doing crazy things like that. We could easily stand there paying attention to our guitars, being an understated version of ourselves and getting it all right. Why would you come to a band to see that when you can just sit at home and stream your shit on Spotify?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think some styles of music lends more to a very sort of calculated.
Oh, absolutely. If you're a technical prog band, nobody wants to see you up on stage being a wanker.
Yeah.
They want to see you up on stage executing this flawlessly.
That's right. That's the appeal.
We are not a technical prog band. We are wankers.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, I mean, it's been a big thing that's attracted people to the shows and to the band in general. And I've I think you've been saying this tagline for years, and I've sort of took it and run with it. Is that we take the music seriously, but we don't take ourselves seriously.
No, I think the moment you start taking yourself too seriously, that's when you run into the danger area of just being. Disappearing up your own ass.
Yeah.
Really. You know, I think a lot of the stuff that we've done over the years has been really good.
Mm.
You know, I'm still super proud of What Tomorrow Brings. I think that's the best thing I've ever written. But you can dwell on that and go, yes, I'll drink my cognac. And as I look back in my 2015 release, how good that was. You're a dickhead, mate. Put your fucking head in. It's good to be proud. It's good to own the things that you're proud of. But you know, you've got to realize that you're just another guy.
Mm.
You fuck up like everybody else. You make mistakes like everybody else. Your music is not the be all of end all of everything. And if it was, we'd be richer now.
Yeah, yeah.
I wish it was the be all end all of everything. Please make it be the be all end all. I got a phone bill to pay.
Working on it.
But it's not. Yeah. So you've got to firmly keep that in mind that you're just a guy.
Mm.
You're just a guy, and it's good to be proud of what you do. It's good to be good at what you do, but at the end of the day, you still shit the same as everybody else.
I think when I first met you, I mean, you've always had that sort of approach. You've always had that balance where, you know, if you're listening to something, you're listening to what you're putting out there. There's a high level of quality and musicianship and skill that's there, and then I meet you. And
I'm a fuckhead.
And
this guy did that?
Yeah. How are these things linked together?
Yeah, what the fuck? Who really did this? Who really did it? Come on.
But there was, I mean, I think that's what that personality is, has seeped into what Dungeon was all about and obviously what we're all about. I mean, was that something that was intentional earlier in the piece as well?
It was the number one thing, I think, when Dungeon first started. We had all sorts of stupid fucking band names and everything like that because we wanted to try and get that sense of fun. Like you look at Anthrax back in the 80s, especially, you know, doing their night stuff and they were having a fucking ball on stage.
Yeah.
Why would you not want to get up on stage and have a fucking great time?
Yeah.
What's the point of doing this if it's not fun?
Mm.
Halloween. I mentioned Halloween before, you know, Dr. Steen, Rise or Fall, you know, you listen to their Live on the UK album and it's just like gags with some music. it's fun. It's fucking fun. You know, even Iron Maiden, you listen to a lot of Bruce's rants, like the Sheriff of Huddersfield, you know, what a mob of dickheads.
Yeah.
How good is that? I want to have fun. I want to have that sense of fun of what we're doing. And you can't do that if you think you're the be all end all of everything. If you go up on stage pretending that you're Yngwie Malmsteen, where you are the most important person in the room.
Put everyone else to the side of the stage in the corner.
Which he fucking did when we played. Yeah. But anyway, that's a different story. Well, what an experience for the first international show that was. but if you do that, you've either got to back up your entire personality, your entire persona, your entire marketing, everything like that around the fact that you are this mystical, better than everybody else character. So you've got to build up that persona.
Yeah.
Or you can't do it half-assed. Otherwise, you just come off looking like a fuckhead.
Yeah.
I didn't want to do it half-assed. And quite frankly, I enjoy having fun. And so putting that sense of fun into what we do, like you can hear it in 220. You can hear it because we can. Yeah. Some of the lyrics in, like, you know, 2D person in a 3D world. Yeah, 2D, 3D, you know. They're good songs, but at the same time, there's this, like, this kind of sarcastic, kind of almost punk vibe to it, which is, again, getting back to the whole punk versus metal thing, how dumb that was because we wanted the same thing. We just dressed different. But, yeah, that sense of fun, that sense of, like, middle finger up at everybody, like, yeah, we enjoy doing this, fuck off.
I think, I mean, oh, well, one thing, the first time I saw you guys live is Dungeon, Rise of the Power Tour, and it must have been in Brisbane at QUT.
Yes.
And I remember being like...
Playing with Tripwire, who were brilliant.
Yeah, Tripwire and Astral.
And Astral, how good Astral.
What a mix.
What a lineup, though.
Yeah, very cool.
Playing after those guys.
And I remember just... And it was a very similar sort of thing to some of the stuff that you've been saying as far as getting into music and sort of watching different things. But I remember just watching you guys, and I'd never seen, obviously I knew Maiden and all these iconic bands, but watching you guys on stage and goofing off and having fun. And it was yourself, Stu, Dak and Steve-O.
Yep.
And, you know, it might have been a bung note or whatever it was, but you guys were taking the piss out of each other and you're having a great time.
Exactly right. You know, a lot of bands would sit there just like going, oh no, I played a wrong note. And we're like, ha, you played a wrong note.
But I never, and obviously, you know, I think just before you guys, Astriel came on who, you know, they play black metal. So they've got their own persona.
This is exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah.
With a band like Astriel, if they goofed off, it would undermine everything they were trying to do.
Oh, that's right.
It has to be po-faced. It has to be serious. You know, even the guys are kind of really laid-back dudes.
Yeah,
you know, they're good dudes. But when they get on stage, when they're being Astriel,
that's right,
they've got to be black metal. They've got to be intense. They've got to be serious. Whereas that's not what I wanted to do with Dungeon.
Yeah, and I think that's what made it a breath of fresh air, because I think for me, a lot of going to local shows in Brisbane, lots of death and black metal. And so that's what I was used to. Mm. And suddenly I'm seeing this band with all these guitar solos and everything, but everyone just taking the piss and smiling. And I'm like, what the fuck is this? And I just like, I'm liking it. This is really good.
It's you have pretty much mirrored our very first Sydney show that we did at the Happy Shamrock Hotel.
Yeah, right.
Our first proper Sydney show. We actually did two shows earlier in 1994 at the Haunted Castle of the Lewisham Hotel, supporting Dr. Zeus, which is where Dak came from.
Yeah.
And Dak ended up joining Dungeon.
Yeah.
Dr. Zeus were fucking brilliant. They were really, 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 really good. So they asked us to join, and we got like the worst non-committal reaction ever. No one cared. Band imploded, and we reformed again. So this time it was me, Steve-O, Dale Corney, and Juz on bass. We played the Happy Shamrock, which was run by Wayne Campbell from Ex Mortal Sin. Yep. So Campbell was like the guy that was like he was the Dave Balfour of the mid-90s. Yeah. But yeah, so we played this show, and I think Malediction was just before us. So it's like the whole bill was just brutal, ultra heavy, brutal death metal, and yeah, we're sandwiched between two unbelievably fucking heavy bands, and we started with No Way Out, and already the crowd was just, what's this shit?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, everyone was like, weird looks at us from the back. They're stopping in the middle of their beers, like looking. And the second song was Call Me by Blondie. We did a cover of Call Me.
Fucking hell.
And I'm calling it in. And I hear this from behind me. Steve was like, no, we're not playing it. No, just don't play it. It's like, and this one's called Call Me. He's like, oh, fucking hell. And he starts counting it in. And I look around. He's fucking angry.
Yeah, well, yeah.
And knowing that we're going to get killed, I look over at Juz, and Juz is like, here we go. And we got up to the first verse, and two or three people had wandered down. They're standing on the side of the stage, just like, what's this? People at the back of the room, you could see them stop and just stop drinking.
Yeah.
And they'd turn around, they'd look. By the time we got up to the chorus, those people had wandered forward. The people in the front are looking at each other, like, what do we do? What do we do here? They're smiling, and they're playing melodic metal. I think I like it. I think it's good. Do you like it? I like it. Do you like it?
Dirty.
Do you like it? Yeah, I like it. It's like Iron Maiden. I fucking love Iron Maiden. Oh, yeah. And then they start headbanging. And by the end of the set, the whole place was just going crazy. Yeah. It was just nuts. Campbell came over and he goes, that was brilliant. You know, you guys were like a real breath of fresh air on the thing. And we're like, can I book you again? We went, yes, you can. And that started it all off. The fact that we sounded like the polar opposite to everybody else on that bill and pretty much everybody else in Sydney at the time, there was nothing like us. So, and just being different and just willing to take a chance and have fun and do that kind of stuff. That was one of the reasons that we ended up on the stage at QUT playing to you, doing the same thing and you thinking the same thing.
Yeah. I think it's been a common theme. I mean, you know, whether it be Dungeon or even, you know, when we started doing the Lord stuff, I mean, we've found ourselves in so many situations where we played on these really odd bills with very odd bands and just gone, like almost saying, what are we doing here? But at the same time going, this is awesome.
I remember we supported Mayhem one time. this is just before we changed over to Lord. And we got the call to support Mayhem. I think we just finished doing Ed Guy. So we just did the Ed Guy tour.
Ed Guy to Mayhem.
Ed Guy. And then we got this call to do Mayhem. And Steve-O said, we've been asked to do this. And I went, Mayhem? The black metal band? The Scandinavian black metal band? He's like, yep. And do you want to do it? And I went, yeah, sure. Did they get the right band? Like, do they know what we do? So we're standing on the side of the stage. And we're having a group huddle just before, and Steve goes, mate, if anyone throws anything, we just walk off, right? And we just went, yeah, right? Yeah, cool. Okay, so if they start getting ugly and we just leave, it's like, right, here we go.
Yeah,
and we went on, the curtain opened, the place erupted. A young Tim Yatris is in the front row. Yeah. A young Mav is next to him. All of the Wollongong metalheads who grew up listening to black metal also grew up listening to Dungeon and stuff that we did. We had a chant. It was amazing. I think probably overall we got a better reaction overall than Mayhem did. And I just remember walking off stage that night just going, well, we earned some stripes tonight because we walked out in front of that and we lived and we got away with it. But if we can go from playing from Ed Guy to Mayhem, we can fucking do anything. And that gave us so much confidence. I don't reckon Lord would be the band that it is right now if it wasn't for that show.
Mm. That's talking about polar opposites, like going from Ed Guy to Mayhem.
They were really good too, actually. Yeah. We met the guys later and they were good dudes. And that was really good. But it was the crowd that scared us and the fact that it worked.
Were you guys announced beforehand, so did people know that you guys were supporting?
It was a fairly last minute thing, but we were announced before, and we got obviously a lot of the the true cult black metal. With the V's instead of the U's there, going, the fuck, man. I think there was enough people there that kind of knew that we liked all kinds of music.
Yeah.
That grew up listening to all kinds of music. They liked black metal, but they also liked melodic metal. Mm-hmm. TY is a great example. Hello, TY, if you're listening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's probably going to edit this.
Yeah, yeah.
Hello. You know, these guys grew up listening to, you know, X Japan, but at the same time, also Scandinavian black metal. You know, there's no rules that says that you have to listen to one thing exclusively.
Yeah.
And I think the fact that we went out there and sort of did one of the styles of music that they dug, they were going to get into it, you know. And it was really, really cool. But no, that was an amazing gig for us. That instilled so much confidence in what we did moving forward, knowing that we could do anything, play to any band. And we've had hits and miss. I remember we did Evil Invaders. Remember?
yeah.
We went out with that Troll or Lol song as our intro song.
We thought, oh, this is going to go down so well. It's going to
go so well. Brum, brum. that sucked.
But I remember that show. And I mean, I've seen this in a number of different places that we played over the years where you'll play those odd bills with the crowd predominantly being there for the large majority of the bill, which would be sort of, you know, more extreme. Yeah. And you start playing and everyone's got their arms crossed, and it was the same with the Evil Invaders, and people sort of standing back a little bit. And then, you know, maybe two or three songs in, you can start to, the same sort of thing you said
before. Starting to thaw a little bit.
Yeah, casually walk up. They don't want to look like they're too eager or too keen.
Because this is the thing, because you got to check you with your mates to see if it's all right to enjoy it.
Is it all right to get in the front? Yeah, I don't want to.
We had a few, like, okay, I was probably being a little bit harsh there. I think it went over well considering.
Yeah.
Considering that wasn't our crowd. But again, going back to that mayhem thing, if we didn't do that mayhem show, you better believe that I'm not going to be walking out on stage in front of like an extreme metal crowd to do the Evil Invaders Festival, being obviously the odd band out.
Yeah.
It was all straight back to mayhem, where it was like, well, you know, if we can do mayhem, Evil Invaders ain't nothing.
It kind of ties in with, I mean, just to bring this full circle,
ooh.
You know, with, I guess, what Lord's all about, what the music's all about. This new album as well, where, you know, it's a good song's a good song.
Yeah.
You know? And
the right tools for the right job.
That's right. And so for us, you know, there's that level of confidence that we can, you know, sometimes we might walk into a situation and go, oh, geez, we are going to be the odd ones out here. But there's still a level of confidence there without being too cocky, but just saying, look, we can hold our own and we can get out there and just do our thing. We don't have to be anything for anybody else around us.
That's right. We don't have to walk out there and just going, oh, shit, we better play all our extreme metal songs now. Otherwise, we're going to get killed.
I'm pretty sure we played Paradise at Evil Invaders.
So yeah, it was that was such a troll, though. That was such a troll. My favorite thing is still that intro music. I swear, like going out to that troll, la, 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 that was my favorite bit of the entire show.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
No one else liked it. I don't care. I don't care. I fucking love that. But I like mixed bills.
Yeah.
I hate going to a show and seeing like five power metal bands in a row because there's only so many like fucking things to listen to and songs about like your mighty battles and
yeah.
Oh man, just like when does this battle get won and we can just move on to the drinking?
Yeah.
it's great to, you know, for instance, like you rock up and you got like say Truth Corroded or something like that playing with you, who are a fantastic band of what they do. Mm. Absolutely completely different to what we do.
Yeah.
But it's such a refreshing thing to have a different band being before or after you. It's such a palate cleanser.
Yep.
From band to band. So you can enjoy the entire night. Enjoy the music for what it is. You don't have to just listen to extreme metal. You don't have to listen to shit power metal. You don't have to listen to like melodic rock. Listen to all of it. It's all good.
That's right. That's right. I mean, it's, I guess that sort of feeds into the whole thing of, you know, you get on stage to entertain and people don't like to say that because it sounds like it's not all about the music, but it's an element of the music, and ultimately people pay money to go out and be entertained. Otherwise they'd sit at home. So you want to be able to put on a show with a whole heap of different colors and shades and things that people can just really stay engaged with and enjoy throughout the night. And if you've got the one color being sort of sprayed across the entire night, then, you know, you're lucky if they're still hanging around by the
The difference is if you've got like a particular themed night, like if you're doing a particular black metal event or something like that. Yeah, and then suddenly you've got like, you know, a Motley Crue cover band turned up in the middle of it. You better believe they're going to get eaten. And well, they should.
But, they can headline it.
They can headline it, yeah. Kickstart My Heart, cover band.
We welcome all of our black metal legend.
Watch Nikki Six die again tonight. but I'm not even the real Nikki Six.
Trust me, it rips off the wig.
Look at me.
But I mean, I think, you know, it sort of ties in with the theme of what this album is, what our music's all about, and that we don't hesitate to sort of embrace lots of different styles, things we like, and a great song's a great song. And for us, we just love, you know, the harder edge of guitars and sort of the elements of what makes metal what it is. And you know,
and even beyond that, I mean, like you listen to our covers.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think we do fairly faithful covers. We may be a little slightly more rocky versions of guitars and stuff like that, but you can't tell me that if you put Touch the Fire on and put that like right smack bang in the middle of an Ice House album, you wouldn't be going, oh, you know, that's really out of place.
Yeah.
It just sounds like, oh, well, Ivor turned his guitar up a bit, didn't he?
Yeah. It's definitely got a harder edge, but it doesn't... And this is something that you're quite good at, is that you'll do what is right for the song.
Yeah, the arrangement's key. Like, I think if you're going to do a cover especially, you've either got to make it entirely your own and fuck it.
Mm.
You know, Judas Priest doing Johnny Be Good comes to mind. What a terrible cover, but what an awesome cover that's terrible.
Yeah.
If I'm going to do a cover, especially of a song that I like, I want to pay the respect to that song. Mm. There's the reason I like that song. And, you know, in some cases we've even met the people behind the song as well, you know, or worked with them in some capacity or something like that. Why would you want to shittle over something that you care about and shittle over the effort and the memory of somebody who's worked hard to make that song what it is? So if we're going to do a cover, I want to make sure that respects those guys and respects their intent.
I think, yeah, it's also a great way for people to discover the originals. I mean, I think the cover song, and look, I mean, there's always exceptions to the rule, but you know, if I hear a cover song that's so far removed from the original, the chances of me going back and finding the original is pretty slim.
Right.
But if it's something that's, I wouldn't say completely true to the original, but pays its respects and I enjoy it, then I'm far more likely to sort of dig in a bit deeper and go, I really want to hear the original. I want to know
what else have these guys done?
This is really cool. Like, it sounds good. This band potentially is really awesome. And, you know, us being Lord are sort of opening it up and saying, hey, go and check out some of these bands from that are still around doing great things.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, I reckon we could keep talking for a long time, and we tried not to go down a path of shitting on anybody. I was gonna sort of.
There's plenty of people to shit on.
Yeah, so we'll do another one down the track, and we'll just do. Oh yeah,
this is shit talking for an hour.
Yeah, yeah.
I with that Dungeon Era box set, like we had like a 200-page bio in there, and like the mission statement in there is like, I'm not gonna shit on anyone, and I think I shit on me mostly, honestly. The whole chapter on Resurrection and how much I ruined that album. I took a great big steaming dump all over myself with that. thank you German fans.
I was gonna actually talk about this a little bit, but I'll touch on it just really, really quickly before we wrap it up. I think what you put together for that box set is so underrated as far as the way that you wrote it, the amount that's in there. I mean, you spent a lot of time putting that together.
No, don't even bring it.
No. And I've said this to you before, and you know, this will be one of a million projects to work on down the track, but I would love to see it personally, just from, you know, an old Dungeon fan, to be able to see that as, you know, a PDF ebook download sort of thing, or even an audio based thing down the track, which would be a hell of a lot of work. I get it.
Yeah.
But it's really fascinating, and I think you wrote it in a really, really classy way as well.
What I'd really like to do though, is get the perspectives of the other guys. Because the other thing I said right at the very start was, this is just one guy's perspective.
Yeah, yeah.
And everybody's going to have different perspectives. And I tried my best, again, not to shit on people. In any band, in any working relationship over years, you are going to have conflicts. You and me and Mark have had it.
Yeah,
we've been at it. you know, it's gotten ugly sometimes, as it always does in any working relationship. How long have we been working together now? Like 14 years?
Oh, yeah, about that, yeah.
Yeah, I mean... You tell me anybody listening here, if you go into the office in the morning and you sit down to some guy that you've been sitting next to for 14 years, tell me that you've never thought, I'm going to punch this cunt. everybody has fights.
Yeah.
And Dungeon was together under the Dungeon banner for 16 years. And of course we had fights. We had a lot of guys go through, and there's a lot of bad blood in places and all that kind of stuff. People shit on each other, all that kind of thing. I didn't want to put that in the book.
Yeah.
It was either going to come across as whiny or is it going to come across as unfair?
Yeah.
Because I can sit there and write all of this crap in our history as much as I can. But if Steve-O sees something where I've said, oh yeah, and that day Steve-O was a complete arsehole, he hasn't written anything next to there. He's not standing there defending himself.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not fair.
Yeah.
And he deserves better than that.
Mm.
So I think if we did go back and revisit this again sometime, I'd love to get Steve. I'd love to get Dak. I'd especially love to get Dale because he was such a big part of the early days. You know, Stu, all of these guys, to give their thoughts and their side of the story.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of the conflicts that went down in Dungeon was just more the fact that we never talked to each other.
Yeah.
And it's kind of ironic, really. I was talking to Juz not long after it came out, and he goes, "Man, I had no idea." Yeah. Some of this stuff that was going on, and Steve-O even brought up the fact that, like, dude, this is the reason we should have talked more.
Yeah.
Who knows if the band would have still been together in that incarnation if we'd actually talked more? Because I'd written it all down later, 10 years after the fact. So it would be great to get their perspective on what happened on these particular dates. I think by and large, what I wrote was accurate.
Mm.
And talking to everybody, by and large, it was accurate. They've got different ways that they viewed certain things, but don't shit on people. there's no need for it. Be the better man. That's on the final chapter album.
Yeah,
yes. there's no reason. There's no reason. So just keep doing what you're doing. Keep being proud of what you're doing. And you know, and if anyone wants to try shit on you, either ignore them or set the house on fire.
Yep. Well, that's some good advice there for the listeners.
Now you've got that lawyer's number, yeah?
Yeah, that's right. Well, I know a lot of people own that box set and had some good feedback from people.
But you know, a lot of people have never opened that USB.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I think a lot of people sort of look at it and go, well, it's just the
CDs.
It's the audio and that's it. Yeah. And I think if people do have it and they haven't dug into it, definitely read it because even for me, like, a lot of things made sense and things started to connect from me being, that young Dungeon fan, then coming into the band.
Why was that guy only in there for 6 months?
Yeah. And sort of you can see sort of patterns and things and go, oh, okay, now like I know sort of my role or my dynamic in the band and I can see sort of where things have come from in the past as well. And I think, at least from my point of view, it was... Obviously, it's your perspective on it, but I think for the most part, it's very objective in the way that you wrote it. And I was really impressed because I was, when you said you were going to do it, I'm like,
here we fucking go.
What are you going to drop?
Yeah. Here?
And
it was none.
And I read it and I went, I remember like actually being quite surprised. I go, wow, you've written it in a very, very classy way and very respectful way with everybody in mind.
Because the stories had to be told.
Yeah.
They had to be told and. In every story, everybody gets put in it sometimes. Unfortunately, to tell a story, sometimes Stu is the baddie.
Yeah.
Sometimes Dale was the baddie.
Mm.
And again, this is from my perspective.
Yeah.
To me, writing the story, Stu was the baddie or Dale was the baddie or Juz was the cunt or whatever it is. And but I really wanted to make the focus be about the mistakes that I made. Mm. Because I can defend myself.
Mm.
If I call myself a cunt in one paragraph, you better believe on the next one, it's like, no, don't listen to that guy. he's really cool. Honest, his mum says he's cool. So it's just not fair dumping anybody else in it just from one guy's perspective. But all of the resurrection stuff, for instance, in that chapter with all the stupid decisions that was made, I'm quite happy to put my hand up and say, yeah, I own all of that sort of stuff because I'm a dickhead, because I'm the guy that was there. Mm. It's my perspective, so therefore I'm there. I can own my own bullshit.
Yeah. Was that a big help for you, getting that out? And I mean, obviously it would have been a pain in the ass to put it together, but
No, not really. It was actually like a...
it was already there.
It was there. I think a lot of people... There was a lot of people that had asked about the history and misunderstood a lot of the history. Mm. We one good thing about the Lord site is we've got blogs up on the Lord site. So we can... we can do essays on certain things if we want to. Like there's one called What's in a Name where the Dungeon Era booklet was kind of expanded upon from that. I think that was kind of the catalyst of it all. Like where a lot of people were like, why did you change from Dungeon to Lord? You know, is Lord a different band to Dungeon? Mm. You know, who are these people on stage and why? And
when are you reforming Dungeon?
Yeah. Oh, it's kind of like, well, we did. It's called Lord. It's the same band. It's just got a different name.
Yeah.
You know, we consider it all the same band. We consider it a 30-year history. We've just got a different name in the middle of it.
Mm-hmm.
So that came really kind of from that, from the blogs up on the Lord site, just to expand things properly and just to kind of set the record straight. Again, to a degree, from one guy's perspective, as much as we can, so people can read it and go, you know what? Okay, I get it. It might be just one guy's thing, but we know what he's trying to say now. Mm. And then they're free to ignore it or call me a liar as much as they like, because, god damn, that happened a lot over the years too.
Yeah. Well, I'll put a link in for that particular blog because that's something that I refer people to quite a bit. You wrote that quite well, and if you want the little USB pass thing, well, suck shit because they're all gone.
So you should have gotten in early.
So you'll have to scour the internet and find a copy somewhere.
Get a bootleg from somewhere. Go to a torrent. No, don't go to a torrent site. Don't, because like we got to pay the bills. Phone bill.
But you can listen to the soundtrack of it all.
Yeah, you can listen. Yeah, that's right.
You can go to our Bandcamp page and get the entire. Well, you can get our whole back catalog.
That's right. In fact, there's a download link to get the entire back catalog and all in one fell swoop.
Bam.
Look at that. Marketing genius.
That's right. All right.
Right at the end of like a 2-hour chat, he's dropped the market bomb.
Well, let's leave on a high note.
Buy our shit. Buy our shit.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Later.
Yeah, we're done. Okay, so if you want to go and check out anything we discussed, if you're new to the band, well done for listening. Thank you so much for giving it a shot and listening to Tim on the podcast, sharing some of his really cool stories. If you want to dig in more to Tim's world or Lord or anything else that he's associated with, you can click on the show notes through your podcast player. You can go to andysocial.net. I'm going to dump everything in there. You can also check out the Dominus Records online store. So you can go to dominusrecords.bandcamp.com or you can go to lordofficial.bandcamp.com. You can go to lord.net.au. You can also pre-order the new album, lord.net.au/FI for Fallen Idols. There's heaps of different ways. So to check out everything that Tim's involved with, and also obviously the Black and Angels stuff, Serenity Defiled, Clarity as well. I forgot to mention Clarity, another side project, very 80s inspired rock AOR sort of stuff that Tim has done in the past and will continue to dabble in the future as well. So he once again does heaps and heaps of stuff. I'll link to some of the video work that he's been doing as well. Just a really talented guy, and I'm really happy and fortunate to be playing in a band with Tim for the past 15 odd years or whatever it's been. Anyway, it's been a long time, so really, really fortunate to be playing in a band with him. So go and check it all out in the show notes, over in the websites, whatever, blah 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 blah. Thank you. Update time. Now, if you're listening to this episode on time, next week, the 1st of August, is the release date of Fallen Idols. I mentioned it in the intro. I'm going to mention it again. We need your help. So thank you so much to everybody that's pre-ordered the album. Once again, it is the most successful pre-order campaign we've ever done. From Dungeon and Lord's perspective, we are on track to having the most successful release that we've ever put out, which is amazing considering the way that the market's been changing so much over the last several years, especially with the way that people digest and purchase music. We are selling more CDs than ever before. Who knows? Well, I don't know where the logic is, but we're making it happen. So thank you so much to everyone that's got behind it. But come 1st of August, we need your help. If there's any way that you can leave a review anywhere on the internet, it could be on a forum, it could be on a blog, it could be submitting something to a webzine, it could be a social media post or whatever it is. It doesn't matter. Any way that you can express your thoughts and your feedback on the new album would be absolutely fantastic. And I will say, honest reviews, folks. Like, put your criticisms in there. Make sure they're constructive, guys, or whatever. Who cares? Like, just talk about it. But just get it out there. Talk about the album. And if you know any metalheads that don't listen to our music or haven't listened to it for a long time or may not be familiar with it, give them a song. Don't have to give them the whole album. Don't overwhelm them. But give them one of the songs from the album. Think about what the track listing is, because there's a mixed bag of different elements and different styles in there. It all sounds like us. It's a cohesive, very sort of flowing album, but there's lots of different elements in there. So have a think about particular tracks and what tracks may appeal to certain people that you know, and see if we can win them over. I'd love to get more people to at least hear the album. I think that's our goal. We're not so much worried about increasing our fan base dramatically. That's always great. But I think for us, the big goal at the moment is to get this album in front of as many people as possible. We want people to hear it and then make the decision as to whether they like it or not. That's always the hardest thing. So folks, Spotify links, Apple Music links, whatever it takes, streaming music, the physical platform, product, the Bandcamp pages, whatever you can do to share, gift, pass on the music to other people will mean the world to us. Social media posts, Insta stories, Facebook stories, whatever it is, just talk about it. It'll be huge for us. If you leave a review anywhere on the internet, shoot me a screenshot of it or tag me in it, and I'll send you out some little thank yous. I really want to thank and reward our inner circle, you guys, for doing all that hard work for us. We are a completely independent band. We have our own independent label. We are self-funded completely, apart from Japan, which Japan's going to be releasing the album through Rubicon Music on the 7th of August. But apart from that, we are completely on our own, and we love it. We enjoy it, but it also comes with its challenges. We are only as good as the tools and the mechanisms that we have in place, and our budgets, which are often limited. So any people power that we can get is huge. So 1st of August, this is a massive call to action, but we are really excited. We are quietly confident that this album, I'm always talking collectively, but from my personal opinion, this is the album that's going to define the band. I really honestly believe it. I know it's completely biased for me to say it because I'm in the band, but when I hear it, there is something about this album which is just going to stand out in the years to come. And a lot of people say Set in Stone is that album, but I think, or Ascendance, or some people even say Digital Eyes, whatever. I mean, there's an album for everybody. But I honestly think that Fallen Idols is going to be the one at the top of the ladder, the tall thing. So it's going to be, I think, a defining album for the band. But in order for that to happen, we need as many people to hear it as possible. I don't want this to be a forgotten, hidden secret. I really want more and more people to hear it. So there you go. I sound like a desperate loser. So go and support us on the 1st of August. Tag us, annoy us, talk about it, and it will mean the world for us. We're so excited. You know how pumped I've been about this album. I've been talking about it for so long, and I'm
emotional. I can't wait. I can't wait for it to come out finally.
Anyway, 1st of August, get into it. Self-Starter season 2. We're underway. We're about 3 episodes in. So far we've had Chris Pachenko from Speed Metal Scrap. Actually we're 4 episodes in, I think. We had Tennille Bond from the Establishment Bar in Dubbo. We've had George Fisher from George's Tech Repairs in Darwin, and we've had Jennifer Marshall from Social Hair Co in Wollongong as well. So we're 4 episodes in. There's more episodes coming, where season 2 runs up until the end of December. Really excited. Some great stories to share with you all. If you know anybody out there that has any form of interest in the self-employment world, wants to be self-employed, wants a extra stream of revenue, wants a side hustle, a little bit of extra pocket money, or somebody who's immersed in these worlds and wants a little bit of inspiration or reassurance, because it's often a very challenging thing to do, pass on Self-Starter. Selfstarter.com.au. It's in the podcast, all the podcast players, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, etc., Google. Share them around, and it means a lot to me. So we are fortnightly episodes every Monday morning at 5 a.m. and really looking forward to sharing more and more with you. So lots of cool stories to come. Getting into the podcast video series, there's an 11-part video series on YouTube and Facebook. Search for them. It's also on LinkedIn as well, so you can find those videos and share them around. LinkedIn's very underrated. If you're on LinkedIn and you're connected with me, find those videos and start sharing them around, because I don't know. There's something about LinkedIn, and I don't think I'm tapping into its potential just yet. So it's something I've got to work on. I've got to listen to more Gary Vee. Pass these videos around. Anybody that's into podcasting or wants to start a podcast or has talked about it, I want as many people to start their own podcast as possible. I don't care whether it's the dumbest shit in the world or the smartest shit in the world, whatever, entertaining, informative, everything in between. I'd love to see more and more of you people starting your own podcasts. I've got some great ideas and plans in the future, but it does involve getting a bunch of you great people together as well. So we'll see what happens. Fucking read between the lines, hey? Talk about dropping hints. So anyway, search for my name on YouTube or go to my Facebook page, the Andy Dowling or the Andy Social Facebook page, and you'll be able to find all the videos there. So it's an 11-part series, all about two and a half minutes in length, very small, bite-sized, basic stuff, really simple stuff. It's just to get you started, you know, fire a few little things in your noggin just to get you started and get you thinking the right way to kick off your podcasting journey. Mailing list hasn't happened yet, but you can sign up to the mailing list over at andydowling.net or andysocial.net. You'll get an almost 20-page PDF download, which has notes from the Getting Into Podcasting video series, plus some additional stuff from Self Starter, from Andy Social, from Lord. So it's a great way to be exposed to the band and learn about the band. So you can do that and check all that out by signing up to the mailing list. I will eventually get into monthly mailouts. I've got a list of things and I'm getting snowed under here. So go and check it all out, andydowling.net, andysocial.net. I don't even know what I'm saying anymore, so I am rambling, and I think this is enough for another episode. So until next week, folks, more episodes coming. I have bulk recorded once again, so I'm just gunning so hard for the end of 2019. I want to bulk record these great conversations, and there's lots of great stuff coming, so that's enough. All right, until next week, folks, thank you so much for the support. Ta-ta.
Larry, please.